WKXL On the Road and our Explore New Hampshire series brought to you in part by Concord Hospital, as well as the Concord Parks and Rec Department, the Greater Concord Chamber of Commerce, New England College, the Spradling Group, and Douglas Leonard and Garvey. New Hampshire Now is about informed discussion with the leaders of our nation, state, and community. I'm Chris Ryan.
We're going to have a great time, Chris, and thank you very much. Your show is fantastic.
Great to talk to you, Chris. Thanks for having me.
I do think, although determination matters, I think support from people who believe in you matters even more.
I was living in a tent for 3 weeks. Very cold, very hard to try and get homework done. But I was determined to stay in school because, I mean, that was the only thing that was going to get me out of this situation regardless of where I am.
I get a chance to talk to your wife, and I get to interview her, which I'm fixing to do, and if next time I see her.
I do know that from spending a lot of time here in New Hampshire, people in New Hampshire expect to meet you face-to-face.
And welcome to New Hampshire Now for the 8th day of July 2019. I am Chris Ryan. Appreciate you joining us for the program this hour of the show, brought to you by Riverbend Community Mental Health as well as New England College. And this segment of the show presented by Concord Orthopedics. As always, the New Hampshire Now program proudly presented by the New Hampshire College and University Council. And we have a great show planned for you today. So we're going to do the first hour of the program at Mount Washington, and then the second hour, Pints and Politics. On the road today, not at the Barley House, we'll be at the Tuckerman Brewing Company with U.S. Senator Amy Klobuchar as we continue our Pints and Politics Road to the White House series. But we begin at the Cog Railway with Wayne Presby, who is the owner of the Cog Railway. You can hear the cog in the background as the two trains are heading up the mountain, and we have a lot of excitement, a lot of questions, as I'm here with Liam and Brennan, my two sons, as a part of our Explore New Hampshire series. And Wayne, how are you?
Very good. Good to have you here.
Good. Appreciate you taking some time for us. So, first off, this is the 150th birthday of the Cog Railway, as old as Major League Baseball, going back to 1969, both baseball and the Cog celebrating 150th birthday this year. We hear the two trains going up in the background. So first, before we get started, just give us kind of an upshot as to what the Cog is, what it represents, and the history behind it.
Well, so the Cog is the first mountain climbing train in the world, and we call it the Cog because it uses what they call a rack and pinion system to allow the trains to acquire the tractive effort they need to get up the mountain. And they use the cog to break down. Now think of the cog as being a like a sprocket and a chain on your bicycle. You know, the cog is actually the sprocket. The chain is actually a rack system which is incorporated into the track, and that cog gear rides right up that. So the difference is that on a bicycle, the spring's going, the chain is going around the sprocket. Here, we're going up the chain, if you will.
So what's the technology that was invented, and how did they go about it? Who invented it to create this technology, which is the first in the world?
Well, so it was the founding person was Sylvester Marsh. He was a native of Camden, New Hampshire. You know, we started building the railway in 1866, completed it in 1869. You know, he's the one that came up really with the rack and pinion system and the rack and cog gear that we use here. Now, there are a number of systems like that around the world now, probably 8 different rack and pinion systems that they use. This is very unique. There's only one other place that it's used in the world, and that is on the Panama Canal. They have similar locomotives to pull the ships through the locks.
So we are super excited about going up to the summit today, where we're going to be doing a show at the next couple segments after these two at the weather station. And you know, most people want to have a clear day at the summit. For me, I'm super excited because it's not a clear day. We're going to go up through the clouds. We're going to see what's above the, if we can get above the cloud line today. And also there's perhaps some thunderstorms in the vicinity as well as we do the show here on Saturday. What is the intrigue in your mind for individuals, you know, getting to the top? And there's a number of ways to do it. The most popular way is the cog. There's also obviously the auto road. People hike. And when did that intrigue start? Because obviously, in order to develop this and to keep this successful over the last 150 years, the interest in getting to the top of Mount Washington had to be there.
Yeah, I think that, you know, this is the highest peak in the Northeast, 6,288 feet. It boasts having some of the worst weather in the world. You know, so being the highest peak and the attributes of the mountain, I think, you know, attract people to the mountain itself. But I think that, you know, the novelty of the COG being the first mountain climbing train in the world, being one of two in the United States, is really the big draw. I think a lot of people come here just to ride the train, but it's an added bonus that they get it to go up to the top of the highest peak in the Northeast.
That's a really good point. And I think that for each mode of transportation to get to the top, there is the aspect of getting to the summit, which for some is the first and foremost thing, but there's also the mode of transportation. For the hiker, they want the experience of hiking up the mountain. For the individual who wants to go on the auto road or take their bike or, you know, do a marathon to get up to the top, it's that experience. So the destination for most individuals is intriguing, but perhaps not as much as the mode for getting up there. Liam has a question.
How many trains are there?
So this year, actually, we have the largest fleet in the history of the railroad. We have seven diesels. The seventh one, which I shouldn't say it's online yet because we're just completing it. We design and build all of our own locomotives here. So we're going to have seven diesels as of this year and two working steam locomotives. So that'll be nine altogether.
Bren?
What is the oldest train that you have?
Oh, the oldest train that we have would be one of the steam locomotives. And, you know, although we say it's one of the oldest locomotives, it was probably actually originally built like in the 1890s. But, of course, it's been refurbished so many times now that it's really hard to sort of pick a date on it. But it probably dates back to the 1890s.
Yeah. So most of them run on biodiesel at this point. And there's a couple times a day the steam ones go up, right?
Yes, well, the steam engines are slower, so we can only send those out at the beginning of the day and the end of the day. Otherwise, they interrupt the schedule of the biodiesels. You know, the steam engine takes anywhere from 55 minutes to an hour and 15 minutes to go up, depending on the quality of the coal and the guy that's firing it. And, you know, the diesels only take 37 minutes.
So we'll talk a little bit about the journey up to the top in the next segment of the program. We're joined by Wayne Presby here at the COG Railway as we're spending the first hour of the show today as a part of our Explore New Hampshire series at Mount Washington. This hour of the program is presented by New England College as well as Riverbend Community Mental Health, and this segment of the show brought to you by Concord Orthopedics. And, you know, when you look at the history of the COG Railway, as you referenced, there are individuals that come from all over the world because of the train itself. Why do you think that intrigue is? As an individual who owns and works here, what is so intriguing to individuals about rail travel in general, but, you know, the COG specifically?
Well, I think, you know, when the COG was first developed, it was such an engineering breakthrough that it was actually on the cover of Scientific American. And I think, you know, that people really still come to see the engineering marvel. I mean, I believe it was in 1976, it was declared a national engineering landmark by the Mechanical Engineers Association of America. And, you know, so I think that's one of the big intrigues. The other thing is that a lot of people are still very interested in experiencing the nostalgia of steam locomotives. And whereas we still run some steam, whereas other places don't, you know, that's a big draw to folks.
The museum as well is here, which illustrates the COG through time and some of the aspects and further explaining, you know, the engineering marvels that exist. And it's a beautiful spot here that you have the station where you look out at Bretton Woods. You can see the Mount Washington Hotel in the background. Why did they choose this spot, you know, specifically as opposed to others to have the COG come up from? You have the auto roads on the other side of the mountain. The hiking originates on the southern port of the mountain. Was there a particular reason they picked this spot? And how long did it take them to build the COG initially? And who did it? Was it Irish immigrants? Was it local people who built the railway?
Well,
a lot of questions there.
Yeah. So Sylvester Marsh was the guy that built the railway. He was a native New Hampshire person who was born and raised in Camden, New Hampshire. This side of the mountain had the first hiking trail to the summit of Mount Washington. It was called the Crawford Bridle Path, and the railroad actually follows that path. And Ethan Allen Crawford, his initials are actually in a rock up along Jacob's Ladder, which is
you know, part of the trestle that goes to the summit. And as a result, the railroad actually follows that trail all the way up. And so I think that, you know, the ridgeline and everything else, it provided the best route at the time to build a line to the summit, because it sort of follows that ridgeline all the way up. Other places, you know, the grades changed so dramatically that it would have required more excavation and stuff. And you're talking about building something in 1866 mm-hmm. to 69, and, you know, they didn't have bulldozers, and blasting was really in its infancy and all that stuff. So, you know, that's why the whole track is actually on wooden trestle work, because they weren't really able on the side of the mountain to do a lot of excavation work.
So you mentioned it started in 1866, ended in 1869. Simple math there says it was a three-year process. So would the workers camp up there? Would they come? Would they come down on a night-in, night-out basis? How did that work? What was the process like of bringing up materials? Did they carry them up? Did they use horses? Did they? What was that process like? And was it local New Hampshire people, or were Irish or German immigrants come and who did the work?
Well, I, to be honest with you, I don't know exactly where the people originated from. I would imagine that they were basically local New Hampshire people mm-hmm. that were hired to come up here. I don't know of any, particular group that was hired to do it. The process was, you know, there wasn't really a road out here mm-hmm. to the base. So they had to hack one out of the wilderness. They built corduroy roads. You know, that's where you take logs, mm-hmm. you cut them down, lay them down on the ground. They used those. They used ox carts to bring the first materials in here. They built a sawmill here at the base. And then they used the lumber off of the property here to actually build the first sections of track. And then, of course, they continued to use that lumber and built the thing all the way to the top. But they used the first locomotive that they built to actually carry all the materials up. And that locomotive is on display here. It's Pepper Sass, called Pepper Sass. It was originally called Hero after the Greek who, in 300 BC, actually designed and built the first steam engine. Although he didn't know it was a steam engine at the time. It was actually a toy that he developed for kids. And it wasn't until actually the late 1700s, early 1800s that the first actual steam engine was built, and the first steam locomotive didn't get built until the 1830s.
That is Wayne Presby. He is the owner of the Cog Railway. I am Chris Ryan. Thank you for joining us for the program. We're at Mount Washington here for the first hour of the show, part of our Explore New Hampshire series. This hour of the New Hampshire Now program is presented by New England College, as well as Riverbend Community Mental Health, and this segment of the show brought to you by Concord Orthopedics. When we return, we'll talk about what it's like to take the Cog all the way up to the top of Mount Washington. And then in the final two segments this hour, we'll be at the top, at the summit of Mount Washington, talking about the worst weather in the world. Back with more from the Cog Railway after this.
You're listening to New Hampshire Now with Chris Ryan, presented by the New Hampshire College and University Council.
WKXL On the Road and the Explore New Hampshire series brought to you in part by the Concord Youth Hockey Association, Orange Leaf Concord, New Hampshire Healthcare Association, and PNN Automotive. WKXL On the Road and our Explore New Hampshire series brought to you in part by Concord Hospital, as well as the Concord Parks and Rec Department, the Greater Concord Chamber of Commerce, New England College, the Spradlin Group, and Douglas Leonard and Garvey.
You're listening to New Hampshire Now with Chris Ryan, presented by the New Hampshire College and University Council.
This is New Hampshire Now with 91450 and nhtalkradio.com. I am Chris Ryan. Appreciate you joining us for the program. This hour of the show is brought to you by New England College, as well as Riverbend Community Mental Health. And the segment of the program brought to you by Paradigm Plumbing, Heat, and Air Conditioning. That's who my family trusts to call for all our plumbing, heat, and air conditioning needs. I encourage you to experience the Paradigm Shift by checking out ParadigmPH.com. We are at the Cog Railway Base Station, where we are set to take the Cog all the way up to the top of Mount Washington. The final two segments, we're going to be at the Mount Washington Weather Observatory, talking about the worst weather on Earth, and it's a great day to observe weather. Not perhaps the best day to get a view from the summit, but we're going to be traveling into the clouds. What would you say right now, when you see the Cog going all the way up to the top, what would you say is the area we're going to hit the clouds at? What elevation at this point today?
I would say you're going to hit the clouds at about 4,000 feet in elevation. Of course, right here at the base station, we're at 2,700 feet. And to just put that in perspective, the top of Bretton Woods is 3,000 feet. The top of Loon Mountain is like 3,100. Mm-hmm. So we're pretty high up at the base station. And, of course, the summit of Mount Washington itself is at 6,288. So a little more than a third of the way up, you're going to start hitting cloud cover.
That is Wayne Presby. He's the owner of the Cog Railway. So take us through what the experience is like, you know, riding in the Cog all the way up to the top of Mount Washington, and what riders experience.
Well, I think, it depends on which mode of transportation they're taking, whether they're riding in the biodiesel or in the steam locomotive. Obviously, if you're riding in a steam locomotive, you're experiencing exactly what people experienced at the turn of the century. So, you know, you're smelling the sulfur from the coal. You're getting cinders on you. You hear different sounds, obviously. You know, the sounds of the steam going in and out of the cylinders, and the whistle sounds a little different, so on and so forth. And the coaches themselves are actually, we design and build all the coaches here. They've got incredible woodwork inside. And so as you're headed up the mountain, you're actually experiencing going through the different climate zones as you go up, and views into a lot of the different, out over the mountain ranges themselves, but also into the different ravines and stuff that comprise Mount Washington. You'll also be looking over and looking at the Lake of the Clouds hut and experiencing, as you change that change in climate as you're going up, you'll see as the trees get smaller and smaller and smaller. And then finally, we actually get above tree line here at around, 5,000 feet or so. And everything disappears except lichen and moss.
That's my favorite part is experiencing the, obviously, I love taking the railway because it's that old time experience, and you get that feel of what it was like back in 1869. And I love taking that type of a time warp experience back. But going through different climate zones, and when you get above tree line, it's just an amazing feeling. Brent has a question.
Has a train ever crashed before?
Have they had problems with the train crashing or not being able to make it up to the top or the bottom?
Well, obviously we have we're running mechanical things, and mechanical things do break down from time to time. That's really the wonderful thing about the new diesel locomotives. They're extremely high tech. You actually run them off a joystick in the cab, and they have these computer controlled systems in there, so we're able to monitor over 500 different sensors within each one of the locomotives. So we get a lot of pre-diagnostic stuff so that we can see things that might be breaking down before they actually break down, and anticipate those things and do a lot of preventive maintenance as opposed to reactive maintenance.
Yeah, that's obviously very important. And you're also, it's on a specific line where they go back and forth. So if there's a problem, I assume you send up another train in order to discharge the passengers.
Yes. I mean, we've had to do that in the past before. If a train breaks down on the hill, we just send up another train with another car on it and transfer the people over. Or usually there's no problem with the car itself, so we can actually just switch locomotives and either keep going to the top or bring the folks down, depending on, which leg of the journey they're on.
That's Wayne Presby, the owner of the Cog Railway. It's the 150th birthday of the Cog, dating back to 1869. What special things have you been doing this year or doing moving forward? I know you had on July 3rd, that was the actual first day that the Cog went up 150 years ago, so that was a big day for you guys. Do you have anything else that you're doing moving forward?
Well, going forward, we've actually completed most of the major celebrations that we were doing. We had a big celebrations on June 22nd and 23rd, and actually the 23rd was an outstanding time because it was actually tied to an employee reunion of all the employees that had worked at the Cog over the past. And, there were people here in their 80s that had worked at the Cog, and they came from all over the country for that celebration. As we go forward during the rest of the year, we have a number of different events planned, Steampunk Festival coming up, some of those things. But we also have some interesting little incentives for folks, like every 150th passenger gets charged the same price as somebody was charged in 1869, which was $3 for a round trip. So,
how old is Mount Washington?
Ooh, that's a tough one.
Millions of years.
So that
maybe
was
billions.
That was another question I wanted to get to is, so the COG's been going since 1869. There's the Tip Top House, which is up there, which I believe it's called, is the old hotel. So people used to go up and stagecoach and whatever. When was Mount Washington first seen as kind of a destination, and when did because in order for there to be obviously an interest in the COG going up there, as we were kind of talking about before, there was that interest to get to the top of Mount Washington. So at what point was the summit's first, that destination where individuals would take the, it would take obviously a long time for horses to go all the way up the road?
Well, obviously, what happened was the Native Americans would not venture up the mountain. Mm-hmm. They called it a geocochuk, the home of the Great Spirit, because of probably the weather conditions on top. Anybody that ventured up, just didn't come back. Mm-hmm. But I think that, as soon as immigration to this country started, people started taking an interest in Mount Washington. And at first it was just a trickle of visitors. And really, that's one of the key things about the COG Railway. The COG Railway was such an engineering marvel and so unique that it is really the thing that jump-started tourism over on this side of Mount Washington. And you got to remember that, beginning after the COG Railway was built, this became the center of tourism in the White Mountains. There were 57 hotels around here, all close to the size of Mount Washington. Although the Mount Washington...
That's why the Mount Washington Hotel is here too, correct? Because the proximity to the COG.
Yeah, which I and a bunch of the owners of the COG bought and owned from 1991 to 2006, and actually opened it for the wintertime for the first time ever. But so what happened was, it became so busy over in this valley. There were 57 trainloads of people a day coming into this valley. And actually the B&M built a spur line that came all the way up from the hotel to the base of the COG, and then people would get off the COG Railway and get off of the B&M spur line and jump on the COG trains and go to the summit, where the railroad had built a 92-room hotel, and they could have up to 150 guests stay up there every night.
So the rail line that we see out front of the access road that comes up here to the COG, and there's a train station there. So that's where the B&M railroad would come in, and individuals would then get, how would they get up to the COG from that point?
Well, actually, the siding and the spur line were actually up further up back towards Crawford Notch, and they cut across what is now the golf courses at the Mount Washington Hotel and came up from there. And like I say, that spur line came right out in front of the workshops that exist down here now, and there were big platforms there and people would just get
off. So it
was
right out front?
It was right out front, not of this building, but down where our shop areas are, where we design and build all of our locomotives and that sort of thing.
Liam?
How cold is it at the top?
Well, you'd have to go in and check the weather today, but usually you can expect it to be 30 to 40 degrees cooler than it is here.
That's what we were expecting as well, where it's 80, it's going to be 85 here, and it's expected to be about 45 to 50 at the summit, which is flat out amazing. Liam?
How many trains can go on the railroad at a time?
So we actually can send out three trains at once. And so, like yesterday, for instance, a very busy day, and we were sending three trains out every hour on the half hour, and we basically did that all day long. And we have up on the mountain, and this was developed since the year 2001, 2002, we actually put a passing loop in with some brand new switches that enabled the trains to pass one another up on the hill instead of the old-fashioned sidings and old switches that they had up until 2000.
Last question to Brennan before we have to catch the train.
Why is it hot down here and it's cold up there?
So why, that's more a question for the next segment in regards to the weather, but we'll talk about that when we get up to the top. It's a good question for when we get up to the weather observatory, when we talk with them up there. Wayne, anything that you wanted to add for visitors and kind of talking about the experience? I think what you talked about before, where this mode of transportation is one where there's, unfortunately, a lot of romanticism in regards to it as opposed to actuality in New Hampshire, where you were talking before about how the B&M would come through here. The rail was such an important part of transportation up to the Balsams, and that was when rail started to go away. I think the Balsams started to struggle as a result of that. Do you feel there's a need for rail to come back? And what are some of the main attributes and intrigue that comes along with it? So it's kind of not just an historical thing for people in New Hampshire, but an actuality.
Well, I think, rail did play a vital part to expanding the whole country. I mean, you know, the Transcontinental Railway, they put the Golden Spike in the same year that the COG was completed, 1869. And, I think that, rail would be a much more economical way to deal with congestion and traffic and everything else than we do now. You think about a rail line, and a rail line itself is much smaller than a four-lane highway is, and you can have traffic going both ways. And so I think they're really, rail lines are cheaper to build than highways are. They're cheaper to maintain. And they have the ability to handle a lot of traffic. And certainly there's a lot of nostalgia. You think about how many words are used just in our common speech that relate to railroads. You know, staying on track, keep steaming ahead. It really has become sort of a fabric of our lives, or had been up until the advent of automobiles. But it certainly, I think, as far as transportation goes, it would be a much better thing to be investing our money in rather than highways.
I think you make a really good point, because we talk a lot about how rail transportation needs to be subsidized. And in places like St. Louis or Baltimore, you'll see heavy subsidization and almost an honor system in order to keep it running, and taxpayer dollars. But taxpayer dollars also fund the highways. And, those cost billions of dollars to build bridges and to maintain and do the projects over and over again, as we have another one of the cogs come back in. Brent, you want to do the final question?
Why does the train make so much noise?
Well, that's the steam engine that's coming down now. And like I was explaining before, it's completely different technology. So what you're hearing is, the exhaust coming out of the cylinders the steam in the engine, and just sort of that clickety-clack of the operating gears and stuff like that. So, yeah, it does make a lot of noise, particularly the steam coming and the air coming out of the side stack. That's actually used to slow the engine on the way down, because it uses compressed air on the way down and really steam to power it up.
That's pretty awesome. How often do you have to, fix the brakes and stuff? Because I assume there's incredible wear and tear.
Well, it depends on which type of locomotive you're on. But to be honest with you, the brakes don't get used
really
all that much.
Because there's mechanisms to slow it?
There's mechanisms to slow it on the way down. I mean, the diesels have all hydrostatic transmissions in them. So, you actually have to add power in order to get them to back up as well as go forward. And so the braking systems are really just used to park the train.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wayne, great talking to you. Thanks so much for having us here. And again, we highly recommend the COG Railway. It's a great learning experience, and it might be the best way to get to the top of Mount Washington.
Yeah, thank you very much. It's been a pleasure to speak with you.
Wayne Presby, the owner of the COG Railway, joining us here on Hampshire Now. This hour of the program presented by New England College, as well as Riverbend Community Mental Health. And that segment of the show brought to you by Paradigm Plumbing and Air Conditioning. When we return, we'll be at 6,288 feet at the top of Mount Washington. And we'll talk about the worst weather on Earth. Why is it 30 to 40 degrees colder on Mount Washington than at the base? That'll be Bren's first question when we get to the top of Mount Washington.
You're listening to New Hampshire Now with Chris Ryan, presented by the New Hampshire College and University Council.